Inside Analysis is your source of information and insight about how to make the most of this exciting new era. Learn more at InsideAnalysis.com.
InsideAnalysis.com.
And now, here's your host, Eric Cavanaugh.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the future indeed. Yours truly, Eric Cavanaugh, here on Inside Analysis, the only coast-to-coast radio show all about the information economy. And today we're going to talk about a rather significant topic, one that affects almost everyone in business these days, because almost everybody uses the cloud, software as a service. We call it SaaS, software as a service. Used to have different names. We used to call it application service providers, ASPs. That's what we called them back in the roaring 90s and the early aughts. Now it's all software as a service. Of course, Salesforce is the poster child of SaaS, but there are thousands and thousands of technologies these days that you can use in the cloud. They cover every last part of the business, from sales and marketing over to managing benefits to stuff like Workday. There are countless software as a service applications that you can use. And so what's happening is we're getting this very strange dynamic developing where a lot of the old practices of on-prem environments are sort of creeping into the world of software as a service. And to help us understand what all that means, we have a roundtable of great speakers today. Rob Glickman, an old buddy of mine, was with a company called Clidara. We also have Ray Reich of RevOps Squared and Ben Murray, the SaaS CFO. So we'll all talk about how you can wrest control of costs. And Rob, before I bring you in, I'll throw out one of my fun quotes I heard from a guy a few years ago who joked that the most unregulated line item on your budget, your IT budget, is your AWS bill because you never know what it's going to be. You're going to walk into the office one day and go, holy Christmas, how much is it? Actually, spammers, phishers use that tactic. They send you an email that says, here's your Verizon bill. It's $4,321. And they want you to click and go, oh, no, don't click. No, that's just phishing. But with that, Rob Glickman of Clidara, welcome to Inside Analysis. Tell us a bit about yourself and Clidara and how you're helping companies wrest control of their software as a service costs.
All right, Eric, thanks a lot. It's good to see you. It's been a while since SAP. So I'm Rob. Nice to meet everybody. I'm a chief marketing officer at Clidara. I've been in marketing leadership for the last 20 years. So I guess a front row seat seeing this transformation from on-premise to the cloud. And I just always have found it fascinating how companies consume software and the changes that have happened over basically since the birth of Salesforce. In 99. Actually, I was just looking. Salesforce still is growing over 20% a year.
Wow.
At $30 billion in ARR.
Wow.
So the grandfather is still growing. And so, you know, Salesforce ushered in this whole new era of software that no longer had to be, you know, shrink wrapped and bought and downloaded and on servers that were maintained by every company. And now you can consume software based on your need. And so it just opened up this whole new era of SaaS applications for any team, for any need. And of course it's been amazing. And it's been, you know, one of the main reasons why we've seen so much innovation. But then of course the flip side is that now we have, I don't even know what the count is, 20, 30, 50,000 B2B software applications, just 10,000 alone for marketing.
Right.
And it's just out of control. So I find it very interesting. I find the topic very interesting. And fast forward, now I run marketing for a company that helps companies manage their software better and understand the right software to bring into their organization at the right time. So it's a really exciting role.
Well, and it I won't say it happened overnight because it's taken about 10 or 15 years to really take hold. But like I said, we were using ASPs in the late 1990s and into the early 2000s. And now, mm-hmm. of course, software as a service, to your point, it's everywhere. And it's been a bit unwieldy in terms of how it has developed organically over time, right? You mentioned Salesforce. That's a big mm-hmm. one. But all these other bit tools, niche tools, certainly for marketing. There are countless different categories in marketing, whether it's influencer marketing, email marketing, social media.
Content, you know, data, platform, you know, advertising. It's crazy. And you mentioned AWS. It was because of AWS and the ability for companies now not to have to, you know, buy and manage and install servers, that they could just rent this time and space on AWS, that they could transfer that energy into thinking about their business and building their business. And then these amazing apps came along. So to start up a business now costs a fraction of what it costs even 7 years ago, precisely because of the cloud. But now companies find themselves littered with all these applications in their company, and it kind of starts to create new problems.
Yeah, that's an interesting term to use, but you're right. And especially if it's a larger company where you have people coming and going, who's managing all that? If you've got 35 or 40 different SaaS products, you know, that's when it makes sense to use a technology like what you guys have developed at Cloudera, where you at least get, if not a single pane of glass, one big pane of glass for understanding what's going where. Because I think one of the big challenges, and we'll hear, I'm sure, from our other guests too, is that these different software as a service providers will creep into other territories, right? So sales optimization becomes sales and marketing. All the email apps I've seen are adding on. Social is sort of an add-on. And what happens in the software world in good times, you start developing outside of your core area of competency. And in difficult times, you kind of retrench and focus on the core, right? Is that what you're seeing too?
Yeah. And it's funny, everybody wants to be the center of gravity, right? So Salesforce, of course, wants you to put all their data into Salesforce and have your, you know, core be Salesforce. And we know from experience that's probably not the best idea. You need some kind of customer data platform. Adobe wants you to use Adobe as the center of your customer data. So every company is encroaching on that hub and wants to be the hub. So users, you know, the people in the businesses get kind of fooled and tricked into thinking, oh, I should do this, I should do that. That's how to use software X and Y. And you end up scattering your data across all these different applications that are competing for attention.
Right.
And then, you know, who loses is your ultimate customer you're trying to serve, because it's hard to create a consistent journey.
Sure. And then you've got, you know, you have the old guard, SAP, Oracle, IBM. I mean, the second two of those three are really on a buying spree, right? And they're coming up with new ways to generate their revenue. But they have lost a lot of the panache, let's say, that they used to have. And now you have the new guys, Amazon, Google, Microsoft, like those are all universes in and of themselves that are trying to sort of build out. I mean, I come from the whole BI analytics space, and Microsoft very neatly catapulted to the top of that pack because their install base is so big, because they have so many people already using other stuff. And so they roll out Power BI, and guess what? Now they're kind of in the lead. But to your point, there are lots of different issues to manage here, one of which is the data sprawl, but the other is just the cost sprawl, right? So let's maybe bring in our SaaS CFO on the call today. We've got Ben Murray is the SaaS CFO. So you've been focused on the financial side, obviously, for a long time. Tell us a bit about your role these days and how you're helping companies wrest control of their cloud costs.
Yeah, definitely. I'm a SaaS CFO by trade, so I help a lot of SaaS founders and their finance teams really get control of, well, one thing is the spend and their metrics, their revenue forecast, et cetera, to understand the unit economics. And really, it's the 80-20 rule when looking at expenses and spend management. Where are you spending the most money or investing the most money, right? We know SaaS companies, employees are a big investment, but the internal use software tools, you know, the SaaS spend management, that becomes a big category. You could be spending 2 or 3 points of revenue, which is a lot of margin, on those internal use software tools. So sometimes the biggest challenge, as I'm sure Rob knows, is just inventorying what software we're actually using within our company. That can be like the biggest challenge just to start before you even get to the spend.
Yeah, and you wonder, because I hear this all the time, I heard it in the BI space and other spaces too, why that's not sort of built in. I mean, knowing who's using your stuff is a pretty important puzzle. Login times and log out times, activity level, whatever the case may be, just knowing who's using stuff is very useful stuff, right?
Yeah, definitely. Right in our accounting system, right, we're capturing which vendors we're spending money with, but that's about it. So we can see that spend by month, which vendors, but that's where, say, the accounting process stops. Now, maybe we analyze that data, look into it, start creating a spreadsheet with all those applications that we're using. But really, it has to be a team approach within these companies to figure out who's using it, what departments are using it, are we actually using it at all?
Yeah, are we? That's a good one. Are we using it at all? I've heard a fun trick in that environment is to shut some stuff down and see who complains. Have you ever tried that before?
I've heard that. That's like you can prove product market fit. Yeah, if you ask your customers if I shut down the service today, yeah, would that be a problem?
Yeah. Well, then you shut it down, and because they will say, yeah, it's a problem, but you shut it down, and if no one complains, then you know, wait a couple of weeks. Go ahead.
Oh, sorry, just a quick thing there. The funny thing is when we talk to customers who eventually prospects who become customers, the first step is to actually inventory your SaaS. And right there, it's like a light bulb goes off. It's just it's interesting how such a simple exercise can be so shocking to a company where they can see all the software that they're actually paying for. Right. And then instantly, usually the first month, they're cutting 20 to 30% of that software right off the top.
Wow.
And then they can get to work on understanding, okay, who's using the software that we actually need and how do we, improve the process around that. So,
That's a really, really good point. And maybe just to get the whole gang in on the first segment here, let's throw it over to Ray Reich, who I know is big on tracking the value of these things and having some metrics around it. It's always good to have metrics because that way you can say, we were up and now we're down. But Ray, why don't you tell us a bit about yourself and what you're doing to help companies figure out the cloud?
Well, thank you. And I'm going to go into the Wayback Machine and go even before our ASPs, application service providers. I started my software experience in the world of time sharing, hosted applications sold as a subscription plus usage in the 1980s and 90s. And it's funny how we've come full circle because SaaS is just a second generation of time sharing.
That's exactly right.
But what I do is we go out and look at how companies are measuring the performance and return on investment of the investment in things like sales, marketing, customer success. SaaS companies have very high valuations that typically are made on a multiple of revenue versus earnings. And the reason being was their high growth rate. So we look at things like, well, for every dollar you invest in sales and marketing, how many dollars of new annual recurring revenue are you generating? That's called the CAC ratio. Or for every customer you have in dollar of revenue, what percentage that's coming back next year, gross dollar retention or net dollar retention. So we have surveyed about 13,500 SaaS companies, and we have the industry's largest database of performance benchmarks. That's what we do.
Yeah, so let's talk about those benchmarks. What do you typically track, and how do you typically track it? So there are some basic things like conversion rates and things along those lines. What are some of the key metrics that you've learned really matter, and then how do you track that stuff?
Well, we use a logistical regression model called R-squared. And if you look at publicly traded SaaS companies, the number one metric that impacts enterprise value to revenue multiples is called the Rule of 40. The Rule of 40 looks at your year-over-year growth rate plus your EBITDA or free cash flow margin. Mm-hmm. That's the number one. Number two is your top line growth rate. And number three is something called CAC payback period. And CAC payback period looks at for how long does it take you to pay back the expense of acquiring a new customer. So that's a very important multiple. But let's go down to things like sales productivity, because Rob mentioned 10,000 MarTech products in the SaaS industry. Mm-hmm. There's about 7,500 sales technology vendors, and that's doubled over the last 3 years. So things like close rate, what percentage of opportunities are actually being closed? You know, closed rates actually went down in the last 3 years, even though they have more technology. I'm going to give you one other metric and then I'll shut up. There's this function called sales development. Sales development is responsible for reaching out and trying to get the buyers to have a sales call with you. Mm-hmm. We just conducted some recent benchmarking research with about 600 companies. What percentage of time do you think a outbound business development rep, sales development rep, spends actually doing outbound outreach?
I'm going to guess 40%, 50%.
Yeah, it was 48% of their time is doing outbound activity. And to conduct an outbound activity, they have to touch 5.4 pieces of SaaS software to do that, from getting the list, enriching that contact so you know that you're talking to the VP of sales for this size company, prioritizing who you call first, second, and third. Then you may have to try to contact with them via email and social media like LinkedIn and a phone call. So it's highly inefficient, Eric. Mm-hmm. And so for me, if you're going to invest in a new piece of technology, the first thing I would ask is, how are you going to measure the return on that investment? And then how are you going to continuously measure if you're actually getting an increased return on investment, or is it actually not providing any return?
Yeah, you know, this is this brings up a lot of different issues. And I think we've done an excellent job in this opening segment of kind of segmenting all the different component parts of the strategy here. But these numbers are always difficult to kind of wrestle with, because any number of things can happen. You can have a high performing salesperson lead the company, that brings the numbers down. You can have, you know, a new product or service offering, that brings the numbers down a bit too. It's kind of hard to look across all these different segments and figure out what the heck is really happening. And I think that's just something that has to be done by management. I mean, I'll throw it over to Rob to comment on as we close up the first segment here. Yeah. But, you know, you have to look at the money, you have to look at the functionality, understand who's doing what, and be able to map all that. That's a human thing, largely. That's the manager's job. What do you think, Rob?
Great point. I think this is, again, the age-old adage of, you know, any amount of software and technology is not going to solve the problem. You have to layer in intelligent processes and good management structure and all of that. So, you know, we always encourage our customers to just, you know, before you buy any software, you make sure you ask yourself, you know, what problem are you trying to solve? Is this a critical requirement now versus in 6 months? What are the alternatives? You know, how long do you think you're going to use this? What's your measure of success and ROI? There's so many things that go along with it. I mean, I've implemented HubSpot a year ago, and I can say honestly that just now, after maybe 13 months, I feel like the integration with HubSpot and Salesforce and the way my team uses it across SDRs and marketing and management, the journey, it took me about a year. And wow. they would never really say that, because there's so many other dependencies and complexities of how that, all of the connections and all of the criteria. It's just really complex.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that is a really, really good point. And, you know, as someone who has been doing email marketing, I've been doing tracked email marketing for 23 years, which I think is about 3 times the duration of the average veteran in our space. So I've been doing it a long, long time. It's actually gotten harder now for lots of different reasons. But once you can see, you can't go back into the dark. I mean, you can't go back into just hoping for the future, you know. But things change a lot. We'll pick this up in the next segment. Folks, we're talking to 3 experts all about cloud economics, resting control of the cloud. We'll be right back. You're listening to Inside Analysis.
What if you could own a piece of the future? What if you could build your next castle not on sand, but on the bedrock of a modern blockchain ecosystem? The first internet gold rush made millionaires. The second wave is minting billionaires. But the third wave is just gathering now, and anyone can get in on the action. Hop online to crowdpointtech.com to learn how you can secure a foothold in the blockchain revolution. Whatever your passion, wherever you want to go in life, there's an opportunity awaiting you right now. Go to crowdpointtech.com to learn how the blockchain will fuel the next generation of innovation in this globally connected world. That's crowdpointtech.com, your trusted agent in an untrusted world. What's the longest running radio show in the world focused on data? DM Radio. Want to be a guest sometime? Send an email to info@dmradio.biz. That's info@dmradio.biz.
If you are trying to quit drinking or doing too many drugs, listen to me. You don't know me and we'll never meet. I had a problem like you once. I drank and used to party a little too much till it got out of control and almost ruined my life. I realized I needed help to fix my problem before it totally destroyed me. If you've tried to fix your drinking and drug problem and you know you can't do it alone, you need to call the National Treatment Advisors. They'll immerse you into a 30-day program to replace your old habits with new habits and totally change your life. And if you have PPO private health insurance, the entire program may be covered. Fix your problem right now before it gets any worse. Get clean. Call now and learn more. 877-247-1585. 877-247-1585. 877-247-1585.
Do you need to get your hands on some extra money right now? Maybe $25,000 or more? If you're a homeowner, now is a perfect time to get cash out while homes in many neighborhoods like yours have gone up in value. You can use the money for anything. It's yours. You can buy an investment property, pay off higher interest debt, or make home improvements. If you need $25,000, $50,000, or more, now is the time. Home values are up, and so is your equity. We offer you a way to use it. No need to use your savings. Call New American Funding now and see how much cash out you can get. Call 800-710-3739. 800-710-3739. 800-710-3739. That's 800-710-3739. NMLS 6606. www.nmlsconsumeraccess.org. This is not an offer or commitment to lend. Subject to borrower and property qualifications. Not all borrowers will qualify. Terms and conditions apply. Equal housing opportunity.
If you served in the Marine Corps, by now you know about the contaminated water problem at Camp Lejeune. If you were stationed or worked at Camp Lejeune from 1953 to 1987, you probably have a lot of questions. We have some answers. You could be entitled to compensation. Billions of dollars are being allocated to pay for damages to anyone stationed at Camp Lejeune during that time. Unfortunately, it appears that officials may have known the contaminated water problem existed and did little to protect their men. The Semper Fi Code was not honored. If you or someone in your family has developed a serious illness, including various forms of cancer, call this Camp Lejeune legal support line right now. You can't turn back the clock and change what happened, but you can certainly call right now and learn your rights as a Marine. Here's the number.
Call 800-254-3218. 800-254-3218. That's 800-254-3218. Paid for.
Welcome back to Inside Analysis. Here's your host, Eric Cavanaugh.
Take us to the future.
Take us to the future, indeed. We're talking with several experts today about software as a service, how to know what you need, how to know what you should pay for what you need. You know, I'll go back into my Wayback Machine, not too far, but 2005 timeframe. I remember the webcast platform we were using over at TWI was only $2,000 per webcast. That's what they wanted, $2,000 per webcast. I now spend about $250 on Zoom, and I could do 200 webcasts, and who cares? I mean, they just don't even care. So that goes to show you how the scale-out model works extremely well, or it certainly can, and you can get great value from this stuff, but don't sign those long-term contracts, man. Like, it's either monthly or maybe it's annual. But if it's annual, you want to pay attention to it. And I'm guessing that Rob Glickman from Cladara, you can get visibility into what stuff costs. I mean, at a certain point, that would be an interesting service offering for your company to just help people understand, oh, you shouldn't be paying that much for email marketing unless you get this bill and that whistle and so forth, right?
Yeah, it's interesting because most companies, you know, companies are made of people, and people are looking for software to solve a specific problem. And typically, you know, you kind of know what your peers are using a little bit. You know, I'm a marketer, I use HubSpot, et cetera. But you really don't know what you should be paying, and you don't know how that's changed over the last few years. And you don't know what companies that look like your company, the same, similar size, employees, size revenue, et cetera, are paying or should be paying. So one of the things we have at Cladara is we have a feature called Discover, where you can, you know, see what other companies that look like you are using. And soon we're going to be offering the ability to see what generally price ranges you should be paying. And so that visibility, if you think about now, when you want software, where do you go? You go to Google, you maybe look up some reviews. But, you know, it's hard to really find objective, you know, benchmarked data. So the ability to see what your peers are using, and imagine getting, you know, plugging in, you know, your company, you know, vertical, number of employees, generally your revenue, and getting spit out a beginner's software stack. This is the software stack that 75% of companies like you use today.
Mm-hmm.
And it depends, you know, up to last year, we used Pipedrive for our CRM, and it was great. And then we migrated, like most people, to Salesforce, because we realized, okay, now it was time to go to Salesforce. And there's that decision point that many companies go to. And then the way our company works is we provide software management. We allow companies to see what they're using, and we do that through a payments platform. So we actually issue MasterCards, and companies pay their software on those.
Oh, no kidding. How interesting is that? So it's kind of a fintech / SaaS optimization play, which makes a lot of sense. I mean, fintech.
Really cool, yeah.
You talk about innovation, man. There's a ton of innovation in fintech. And, you know, I've used the example on a couple of shows over the years. If you go in the Wayback Machine, think about Western Union. It wasn't that long ago. You had to pay $25 or something to send $500 to your kid across the country. Right. Now you just Zelle it or Venmo or whatever. Of course, there are business models built on top of that to track communications and track dollar amounts. And, you know, they have other service offerings they can develop on top of that, which is why they can send your money at no charge, right? Mm-hmm. But that's a very interesting approach. Maybe I'll throw it over to, to Ben Murray, the SaaS CFO. The fintech is lighting up these days. And I guess you probably have a sort of a matrix, you know, like Rob said, there's a starter kit. You want to have your email marketing, you want to have your social media, you want to have something else, RevOps, for example. What do you think about the basic version of things and then rising up? How do you know when to do what?
Yeah, that's the hard thing. And I see that in the finance and accounting area all the time. Maybe you start off on QuickBooks and Xero, and now we've got to go to more of an enterprise solution. You know, we need revenue recognition. We need to hook up to sales tax compliance. We need better reporting. You know, so I probably every department within a SaaS company goes through that same evolution, and you see it in the CFO area as well. And it's hard. Do I make that jump at 5 million revenue, 10 million? What's that inflection point where I should go to a more robust solution? Mm-hmm. But it's a natural evolution. And I say, you know, in the Office of Finance, just like product development has their roadmap, we have our own roadmap as far as what capabilities we need to build out that can make us more efficient in the back office.
Yeah, and I'm just guessing here, you know, focus on cash flow, for example, is important. You know, being able to do projections like, okay, if these deals come through, what are we looking at? If those deals don't come through, that's all crucially important stuff for especially small to mid-sized businesses, especially during times when there is recessionary pressure, even if there's not a formal recession, right?
Yeah, you need one. It's always the accounting foundation, right? So we need clean books. We need to close them fast and efficient each month. But then, yeah, you roll into the forecasting process. So we need some type of FP&A solution that gets bolted onto your accounting solution that feeds that data. So you can do the forecast. So you can do the cash flow forecast. So you talk to sales. What are you committing to this quarter so we can roll it through our forecast? So that's a really important part of the process. And I think you mentioned earlier, you know, once you have some of these solutions, kind of that light bulb goes off where it's like, I never want to go back to spreadsheets, right, to forecasting, for example, which is really common, really common. But you progress. There are just points where it's like it makes sense to make that next jump and you never want to go back.
Yeah. And I'll bring in Ray. I see, I think he's ready to jump in here. You know, one of the really powerful components of going down the road that Ben was just talking about there is that if you've been using something like a QuickBooks or some, that's what we use, or some other system for a period of time, then that sort of year over year analysis becomes a lot easier. You don't have to call up Ben in accounting and say, hey, could you run a report for me on XYZ? You just do it inside the tool. And that's the whole point, right, is that you now have a center of gravity around this domain. Let's say it's finance in terms of the money side of the equation. And you want to be able to understand, well, why are these numbers off and what happened here? You can do that much more easily once you've been using these tools for a while. Right, Ben? I'm sorry, Ray, I want to throw it over to you.
In theory, the answer is yes. But let's we do, you know, all I do is research every day. So I'll just talk about the benchmarks. The number one used tool for financial reporting and metrics reporting in the SaaS industry, Excel. 74% of companies are still using Excel.
Wow.
So I'll give you another benchmark. And Rob, you mentioned, wouldn't it be really nice if you could look at companies by segmentation, their size, the distribution model? Well, it's exactly what we do. So the median that a SaaS company, right, who's trying to sell SaaS products to your company, is investing in a salesperson to technology that she or he is using is $548 a month. So we're talking about $6,300 a year. And then if you look at what technology is being used, we can tell you that 78% are using a CRM, 50% are using a sales engagement platform. 48% are using a sales intelligence platform. I won't bore you with all the data, but the question we keep asking is, if you're spending $6,000 a year on a salesperson to use SaaS technology to help them improve their performance, why did only 38% of salespeople in the SaaS industry make quota in 2022?
Yeah.
I mean, it's shocking that we provided all this automation and, quite frankly, weapons of mass destruction in a 22-year-old's hand, and their performance is going down.
Well, you bring up a really good point, and I can almost guarantee that this answer is the correct one, at least partially correct, is complexity. It's, again, the complexity of the environment and being able to map what did what for me in which particular scenario. And, of course, usage, if you're not using it all the time, right? I remember the CRM days, all right, I'll tell a dirty story of a war story, working for a big media company, and I went up to New York, and they were just like, man, everyone must use the CRM. You must use the CRM tool. This is like year 2007, okay? So we're talking 16 years ago. And there was, I can't remember what it was called, it was an absolutely dreadful technology, dreadful. And what would happen is very few people would use it, and the people who used it would use it pretty well, and they'd put lots of information in there, and the thing was just slower than frozen molasses. Like, you'd go in and start, okay, I did this call with someone, let me go and enter in the CRM, clickety-clickety, and then wait. You'd wait so long, you'd go back to email or pick up the phone or do something else. You just wouldn't use it anymore. So that usability is really, really important. It has to be fast. It has to do what you want it to do. It has to be fairly cost-effective, and you have to use it, and you kind of have to stick with your guns for a while, right? Right? You shouldn't be bouncing around too much. You should make a decision and stick with it at least for a year. What do you think?
The answer is yes, and I'm going to share a best practice. There's a company called ZoomInfo. ZoomInfo provides sales intelligence software. They went public about a year and a half ago, one of the best success stories in the last 18 months. Their revenue operations group have product managers whose job is to view, watch, record, and analyze how their salespeople are using technology and the productivity of it. So they look at a sales development rep and they do unit of work measurements, et cetera, and say, huh, they're spending 20% of their day doing this list creation. And their job is to go back and determine how they can make better use of the technology or re-engineer the process right, to make that unit of work more efficient. So right. I would say to any company out there who has a complex tech stack, watch how your AE or your SDR or your customer success manager is performing their day-to-day work, and look at, can I reduce the number of applications, or can I change the process to make better use of the applications they have?
Yeah, and the answer is always going to be yes.
Yeah, it's so interesting. It's so interesting because Even very simple things, if you don't analyze them, you can miss them. And then I think it was Ben Array who mentioned NRR, net revenue retention. So we look at, well, every company looks at churn, which is, you know, the number of customers you're losing. And so you want to minimize the churn rate, the percentage of customers you're losing. And one of the key data points is, what is the handover between sales and customer success? And so we kind of went deep in this, and we realized very basic things that, you know, there were some sales, some AEs who were entering a lot of really good, rich info in Salesforce, that, you know, updating the fields to talk about exactly what the customer that they closed, what any nuance that success should know about. And others who weren't, or some weren't doing it at all, but even the quality of doing it better than others, that had an effect on churn, because then success could pick it up with the first call being very, very specific. and what fields are considered mandatory versus optional are very important. So it really gets down to, like, basically it could come down to one field, whether it's mandatory or optional, that can have a big effect on your ability to retain and grow a customer. So I find that fascinating. Ray, I want to talk to you more about that, because I think that that's the level of detail companies need to go at. And even at a not too complex level, like understanding how it's almost like ethnographic research, you know, looking at consumers of the software, which are their employees, how they're actually using the software, because it's not isolated. It's how are you using Salesforce vis-a-vis Slack, vis-a-vis Zoom Info, vis-a-vis email and your cadences. And that's really where the complexity comes in.
Yeah. Eric, if you're okay, I'd love to double click on something Rob just said.
Yeah, go for it.
It's amazing. It's customer relationship management software, Salesforce, right? It's been used under the guise of it helps a salesperson be more productive. Quite frankly, it's just the opposite. They're less productive, but sales managers are supposed to now have more visibility into how your pipeline is performing.
Right.
But if you go out and talk to salespeople, the least favorite part of their job is entering data into their CRM.
Yep.
That's why it's such incomplete and bad data. So one of the biggest opportunities I've seen in the last 5 years is applying artificial intelligence to other communication vehicles like emails or text, because they become very predictive of whether a deal is going to close or not. So it enhances forecast management. So one of the biggest evolutions right now is revenue intelligence software. Instead of looking at the deal information the salesperson puts in, it looks at the communications between the AE, the pre-sales consultant, or if it's an existing customer for an upsell, the customer success manager is much more predictive of a deal closing than the data in the CRM.
Yeah, and you know, you must have been reading my mind, because that's exactly where I was going to go. And I was going to give a couple examples that I've seen. Right before the pandemic, I went to the Marcom show out in Boston. There's a company called VanillaSoft. And what they do, I think, is absolutely fascinating. And this is a whole trend. I mean, you really picked up on something here, Ray. What they do is they connect to your CRM, they connect to your email, your Slack, or whatever you want, and they're kind of monitoring, they're just kind of keeping tabs on the pulse of this activity. And then the VanillaSoft will tell your salesperson who to call next. So it's no longer a cherry-picking exercise by the salesperson. And just as an example of how it works, you'll have, let's say, 50 contracts or 50 companies you're trying to get a contract with. Maybe GE is one of them. And the system will know through clickstream analysis, hey, in the last 30 minutes, we had four people from an address we resolved to GE on this web page looking at analytic databases. So when that guy gets off the phone, boom, the next thing comes up, call GE, call this person. So now you're not relying upon the sort of loosey-goosey understanding of a human being trying to crawl across emails and Slack channels and all this other stuff to figure out what actually indicated or what meant something somewhere. You're letting the machines do all of that. And then, of course, if you do that properly, then these machines can identify patterns. And back to Rob's point a minute ago, well, guess what? You figure out, hey, when we bring this up in the conversation first, those calls go really well. When we don't bring that up first, the calls do not go very well. That's a little thing, but it's really important. And I got to tell you, one thing I'm positive about in this modern world is that you have to change up what you're doing. Somehow, some way, you have to change, whether it's the frequency, the cadence, whether it's any number of factors about what you're offering. You have to change something to get a different result, because dynamics are changing. All kind of people are changing. We'll be right back. Don't touch that dial. You're listening to Inside Analysis.
Do you need to get your hands on some extra money right now? Maybe $25,000 or more? If you're a homeowner, now is a perfect time to get cash out while homes in many neighborhoods like yours have gone up in value. You can use the money for anything. It's yours. You can buy an investment property, pay off higher interest debt, or make home improvements. If you need $25,000, $50,000, or more, now is the time. Home values are up, and so is your equity. We offer you a way to use it. No need to use your savings. Call New American Funding now and see how much cash out you can get. 800-627-6493. 800-627-6493. 800-627-6493. That's 800-627-6493. NMLS 6606. www.nmlsconsumeraccess.org. This is not an offer or commitment to lend. Subject to borrower and property qualifications. Not all borrowers will qualify. Terms and conditions apply. Equal housing opportunity.
In times of economic uncertainty and chaos, your money means nothing. You may not even be able to get it from your bank or ATM. And the money you do have in the stock market will go down and down. What you can bank on is gold and silver. Gold and silver have been a reliable and trusted form of currency for thousands of years. Gold and silver have never been worth zero, and typically gold holds its value during economic turmoil. Call the Gold Hotline now and learn how to protect your money and your assets with gold and silver. And learn how to set up a new IRA or roll over your current one into a gold-backed IRA. Protect your money from the next market crash with gold and silver. Call now for your free gold guide.
800-755-4281. 800-755-4281. 800-755-4281. That's 800-755-4281.
Can your IRA stand up to the next financial crisis that our top economists are saying is at our doorsteps? By allocating a percentage of your IRA into physical gold and silver with a tax-free rollover, you can diversify and safeguard your holdings from turbulent markets and economic downturns by putting your IRA back on the gold standard. Find out how to safeguard your assets with a tax-free rollover with a Genesis Gold IRA, the only IRA that can hold physical precious metals. Call now for your free gold and silver report. Protect your IRA today with one simple phone call and learn how to qualify for up to $10,000 in free silver. Call Genesis Gold Group, empowering faith-driven stewardship. 800-504-1123. 800-504-1123. 800-504-1123. That's 800-504-1123. If you're living with diabetes and using insulin, you know the pain of pricking your fingers over and over again. Ouch! Well, by wearing a small remote device called a continuous glucose monitor, or CGM, you can reduce the pain of pricking your fingers. If you administer insulin three or more times per day or use an insulin pump, call now and learn how a CGM can help you.
Painless. No more pricking my finger.
No finger pricks.
Convenience. They delivered it free and they took care of all the paperwork.
You can reduce pain right away. Plus, it's accurate, easy to use, and helps you spend more time in range. And if you have insurance, you can get a new CGM at little or no out-of-pocket cost. Call now and get free shipping of your new CGM. Plus, we'll bill your insurance for you. 800-514-9849. 800-514-9849. 800-514-9849. That's 800-514-9849.
Welcome back to Inside Analysis. Here's your host, Eric Cavanaugh.
All right, folks, back here on Inside Analysis. What an all-star cast we have today, talking to Rob Glickman from Cladara, also Ray Reich and Ben Murray. Ray Reich is the RevOps guy, I should say, and Ben is the Software as a Service CFO. And we just in the break talked about briefly ChatGPT and what a huge thing this is. I mean, ChatGPT is just outrageous. I saw a headline today. They said 90% of content on the web will be driven by AI in like 5 years or something. Of course, it's a theory. It's a prediction. And I've played around a bit myself with ChatGPT, had it write articles on things just to kind of see what it looks like. And, it's pretty darn good. They seem fairly rudimentary, but according to one of our guests here, Rob Glickman, you can train this thing over time. So, Rob, tell us a bit about ChatGPT and how you folks are using it in your mission to control the cloud.
It's funny. We've been hearing about AI forever, but it seems like 2023 is going to be literally the year of AI. I mean, OpenAI about 2 months ago released this version of ChatGPT-3, and it's just remarkable. It's remarkable what you can do with it. Anything from, helping you kind of jog your, creativity to write blogs, understanding how to position something. We use it for everything. We use it for voice to text. We use it for, we use something called DALL-E for images. Mm-hmm. So we upload a reference image and it creates net new images, beautiful imagery that you can inform. And you can say, I want an image of a, you know, a lady looking at a computer screen in a professional office. And then it provides it. And then you say, okay, now add sun and add more papers to the, I mean, it is remarkable. We use something called, we use Speech Enhance for audio. We used to, you know, do all of these different audio takes on very high quality microphones, and creating a video was much harder. Now we use AI to just enhance the existing audio. Mm. We use GitHub Codepilot, GitHub Copilot for coding. So you can create code and just saying, you know, create a string to, you know, clean this data and then move the data from this form to that form and then upload, you know, this data from column C and then create a graph. And you can just tell the AI these instructions and it produces.
That's crazy.
Amazing. Yeah. So it's just accelerated your ability to get stuff done. Now, the unfortunate part is very quickly, Google will need to continue to update their engine, because there's going to be a lot of crappy content out there created by AI. You always still need, I mean, it's just like SaaS software, you know, you can buy it, but you still need the human component of understanding what you're using it for, how to make it your own. So AI is a great accelerator, in my opinion, to help you get your work done or serve your customers, but you still need that, you know, layer to personalize it and make sure it's accurate and unique.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I mean, you're going to see a lot of companies using this stuff. I've actually noticed just in Gmail, of course, because Google is a leader here. Maybe I'll throw this over to Ben to comment on. But I've noticed, well, a couple of years, maybe a year and a half ago now, when it would start completing your sentences for you. Right now, I'm a typist, so it doesn't help me. It actually takes more time for me to go and select whatever I need to do to accept what they've done. Or, you know, I'm like, I'll just finish typing it myself. So I'm doing it a little bit differently anyway. But what's interesting is that you're going to have this sort of linguistic reflection of language, and it might start changing how we talk to each other. You think about how millennials and younger kids on their phones are just so addicted to their phones. It's kind of changing how they interact with people. I mean, there are some unforetold dynamics that are going to be unfolding here. But the bottom line is these are new, very powerful technologies, and you want to find ways to use them. And what Rob was just describing there with ChatGPT, it's like a macro, right? You can use it like you would write a macro. Well, there aren't too many people who know how to write macros in the world, but there are a lot of people who can say, hey, take this column and do that and do this and do that. And then if the machine does what you want it to do, wow, that's pretty cool. What do you think?
They have this API playground. It's just amazing. But yeah, go for it.
Yeah, I'll throw it over to Ben. What do you think about all that?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty, you can't go to LinkedIn or Twitter without seeing someone show an example of OpenAI and ChatGPT. So, you know, I've seen it now in, say, even Excel formulas, interpreting Excel formulas. You know, you have this complex formula. What is it actually saying in plain English? Or, like you said, Eric, typing in a plain English request, like, hey, sum this, divide by that, and it'll translate it into an Excel formula. You know, so you're seeing all sorts of applications. Of course, it seems endless right now. But yeah, it's the hot thing right now.
Well, and you're getting a lot of AI baked into some of these platforms. I noticed in Google Sheets, for example, it was offering to do some data cleanup for me. It said, oh, I noticed that you've got this column of states, and some of them are two letter, some of them are three letter. Do you want to go ahead and do all two letter? It's like, wow, yes, click yes. And you're off to the races. It's still not there. I mean, it's still loosey-goosey. It's like that automation stuff we talked about at the top of the hour. When you're trying to personalize with automation, ooh, you got to be real careful about like mapping out all the flows and everything and what you want to say to these people. So it's, and then when it doesn't work, it's like, hey, F name, what do you think about such and such? I'm like, okay, that's an automation gone wrong. But nonetheless, you got to kind of ride the wave here. I'll throw it over to Ray to comment on, and you do research all the time. So you have to pay attention to what's happening in your space, because things are changing, right, Ray?
Drastically, and in 2023, everyone's looking at how do I reduce expenses? And I'm going to give you one example of that in the sales organizations. So sales development reps that we talked about earlier in our show, about 50% of the emails that they're sending out to their target buyers are personalized. At median, they're spending about 12 minutes per personalized email, and they're saying they're sending out 20 of those a day. So you do the quick math, and it's like, well, they're spending 3 hours or 4 hours a day writing personalized emails. And by the way, the open rates have went down, and they're not that personalized. So ChatGPT, you can actually put in the email that's personalized to a male VP of marketing and ask it, please rewrite this for that particular audience.
Wow.
And it will rewrite the email for you.
That's crazy.
Or it'll actually write an email, say, based upon the VP of finance and I'm trying to get them to download this white paper, write the email. And in a matter of 30 seconds, it actually will write that email in a very personalized voice and tone. It's incredible what it could do.
That's wild. And of course, you're getting it right now. It's free. But obviously, there are costs that are going to be associated with this stuff. But the cost is so low. I mean, AI, again, if you train it properly, it has this corpus of everything that everyone said. And you can kind of train it on your organization and your culture and your technology and really get it to kind of refine what's happening and use it as a starter kit. I think that's the key, right? You use this to get something on the canvas and then you manually go through and touch things up. What do you think, Rob?
Exactly. I think that's, you know, it's just like anything else, you know, very quickly, what we're talking about now in 6 months will be common knowledge and every company will be using it.
Wow.
I'm exaggerating a little bit, but it very quickly, this is why we love technology. What's new becomes mainstream. So then it's the companies who win will be those who can use it in a smart and effective manner. And it's just as an additional, you know, time saver. It's something to inspire a different angle for an email. And so that's really the intelligent way. It's just another layer on top of what you hopefully do very well already. People who use it just as shortcuts, I think they won't find success ultimately.
That's interesting. That's a good point. In other words, using it as a shortcut is probably you're going to short yourself, so to speak.
Yeah, everything will catch up. You know, it was just Google in the early days. You could write a great piece of content and it could index really well. But now those days are over, right? You can't just write a great blog post and it'll index. You're competing with, you know, so much more. So you have to constantly find different ways to become relevant. And so it's always going to get harder. I think this is going to make things much harder for middle of the road companies who don't just use it as a starter, like you said. I think there's the conversation for education and, you know, how it's going to change, you know, high school essay writing and all this. Teachers and professors very quickly will just catch on and say, okay, this feels like an AI written paper, stuff like that. So it's just another example. But I think really the interesting thing that Ray mentioned was, you know, how do we, you know, back to our topic of using all of these different software tools, it's just becoming harder and harder as an employee to, you know, make sense of them and do your job with the, you know, this collection of different software that's supposed to be helping you. How can AI help in that and kind of cut across and be this layer on top of all these apps? That I think is going to be that's a huge area that I think is going to be very attractive for businesses.
Wow. You just gave me I think that's exactly correct. That's very interesting. And you kind of gave me an idea here that I've thought about in the back of my mind for a while, which is like if you're AWS or Google or Microsoft, one of these hyperscalers, you know, boy, wouldn't it be nice to be able to allow the AI to track you across your applications and start giving you some of this intelligence. I mean, that's a service offering in and of itself. Yeah. Where it watches what you own. It's in your space, so it's your software that you purchased, that you're using, et cetera. Very cool stuff, folks. Look these guys up online. We're talking all about resting control of the cloud. Folks, podcast bonus segment is up next. You are listening to Inside Analysis.
Listen to KCAA Loma Linda for less confrontation and more information.
This segment sponsored by the generous support of the Dream Team. Looking for the keys to something bigger and better? Downsizing or relocating to the perfect spot? Oscar Ramirez from Century 21 Lois Lauer Real Estate and Matt Flores from Secure Choice Lending are here to help you sell or buy with their trusted and experienced knowledge and advice. People are calling Oscar and Matt at 951-751-3249. That's 951-751-3249. real estate and loan advisors Oscar and Matt can give you a no-cost consultation. You don't have to buy anything. Matt and Oscar can help you figure your way through the complicated real estate market. Email Oscar at loislauer.com or on Instagram at Oscar Ramirez Garcia and Matt Flores at securechoicelending.com. Don't let today's real estate pitfalls stop you from dreaming. Make your new home dreams come true. DRE number 0207-0344. Se habla español.
You've eaten lots of great food and not so great food at restaurants. Cowboy Burgers in Fontana and now on Arlington and Riverside will fast become one of your favorites with their delicious mouth-watering burgers and breakfast burritos. Cowboy Burgers and Barbecue also serves fantastic smoked barbecue baby back ribs, tri-tip, chicken, pulled pork sandwiches, as well as lunch and dinner plates. Everything is made from scratch, including their delicious side dishes like coleslaw, potato salad, barbecue beans, and much, much more. Check out their rich, decadent chocolate brownies.
Hi, I'm food critic Alan Borgen, and you can dine in, take food out, or have them cater your next special event. I highly recommend Cowboy Burgers and Barbecue at their new location at 5573 Arlington Avenue in Riverside. Just look them up on the internet. That's Cowboy Burgers and Barbecue. Happy eating!
And perfect for the holidays, Cowboy Burgers and Barbecue is also available for catering. That's Cowboy Burgers and Barbecue in Fontana and now in Riverside on Arlington.
When you're alone and life is making you lonely, you can always go downtown.
Nestled in the heart of downtown San Bernardino is Living History and the place you want to be. On the internet, it's 320downtown.com. That's 320downtown.com. The Enterprise Building, with its rich interiors, it's a place so special, you just have to see it. It's at 320 Northeast Street in downtown San Bernardino. The Enterprise Building is the heartbeat and entertainment life of downtown San Bernardino, as well as a distinguished space for your new office or building. You can grow with its newly renovated banquet area, meeting rooms, 320 bar, top deck terrace, and plenty of parking space with over 8,900 square feet of reasonable and available opportunity. Today, it's family-owned and operated by Alicia, Alan, and their son Ryan. They've rolled out the red carpet and crafted a gracious space, keeping the historical feel of the building while providing the opportunity to create the future memories of your upcoming wedding or celebration. It's 320downtown.com. That's 320downtown.com. The Enterprise Building. It's downtown, waiting for you.
The Tri-City Shopping Center in Redlands is serving up some really cool ice cream at La Micho Acana. Then get your chocolates and other delights from See's Candies. Moms and future moms who visit the mall can cool off and relax while they get treated like royalty at Shiny Nails or Francis Nails and then pampered at Texture Hair. The Tri-City Center is filled with retailers who care about you. Shop at the Tri-City Center in Redlands and see why they call it the Mall with a Heart.
What is the Del Walmsley Radio Show?
Welcome to the Del Walmsley Radio Show, where the hype ends and the help begins.
You need to stop being dependent on a paycheck. All of these self-help motivational people, they wind you up like a little clock. Click, 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 click. And then they let you go. Boom.
Who is the show about?
I'm your host, Del Walmsley, and as always, we're working on your financial freedom.
Learn the secrets of building wealth from Del Walmsley. Weekdays from 11 a.m. to noon, right here on KCAA.
It's that time of year again. No, not the holidays. Medicare open enrollment. And if you have questions about Medicare, you should talk to the local experts. Paul Berich and Associates. Paul and his agents are certified with plans that are accepted by most of the medical groups in our area. Call 909-793-0385. Their services are free, and after 41 years in the business, their agents are trained to help you pick the plan that's right for you.
Let me ask you a question. Are you holding on to labels that are holding you back and preventing you from leading a more purposeful, fulfilling life? Join me, Deanna Radulescu, on Label Free every Friday at 7 a.m. on KCAA, where I sit down and talk to my guests that are living dynamically on their own terms, free from labels, leading a purposeful life. I ask you to join me and my community as we dissect how we can rise above those labels and truly live in our life's purpose.
Bob Vila here with my home improvement tip of the day. Winter's on the way, and that means homeowners are once again resuming their seasonal quest to get the most heat for the least money. If you have a fireplace that's inefficient, you might want to consider installing a fireplace insert. Most inserts are considerably more efficient than the fireplaces they replace. The best way to vent an insert is into a stainless steel liner that extends through the existing flue, from the top of the stove to the top of the chimney. That setup provides the highest efficiency, plus it's easy to inspect and clean. Though you can also vent the stove insert into the existing chimney, it's a bit trickier. That's because the proportions of the existing chimney may not match up with the size of the insert. If that's the case, the chimney won't draft properly, and besides getting smoke in your eyes every time you open the stove, you'll also get a rapid buildup of flammable, acid-laden creosote in the chimney. Get more info at bobvila.com and right here at home with me, Bob Vila.
You're listening to KCAA Loma Linda at 106.5 FM, K293 CF, Moreno Valley.
NBC News Radio, I'm Chris Caraggio. At this hour, officials in Southern California are addressing the investigation related to Saturday night's deadly mass shooting.
Words cannot say how much we are grieving with the family members and that suffer through this tragic event.
That's Torrance Mayor George Chen, who spoke ahead of tonight's press conference. Earlier Sunday afternoon, authorities were engaged in a standoff with a person in a white van who was possibly responsible for the mass shooting. They confirmed that suspect died from a